Hi, I'm Josh, and I'm Magic.
I am Matt from the Dead of Night.
And Adam is a devil doll by default, and this is Horror Show Hot Dog.
I actually got it right that time.
All right, so this week we were working on ventriloquist dummy movies. That's harder than it looks.
It is. It's hard to watch, too, is what I learned. Often.
You mean just me right now, or yes. All of these movies?
Yes.
Both.
Yes.
So Quentin Tarantino in his...
Infinite Wisdom.
For some reason, he's on the commentary for What Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, that was confusing to me as well.
It's because he's friends with everybody.
Yeah, I think if you know Quentin Tarantino and you're doing something, you just call him and have him be in it.
It's like, hey, do you want to come over and watch my movie? Yeah, man! Fucking, I'll bring over a whole just bowling ball filled with cocaine. What? Why would you bring a bowling ball filled with cocaine?
And who hollered it out?
That'd be fucking great, man! Just fucking shut up, I'll be there!
It's going to be brilliant. It's going to be the best thing.
And then
the
it's like, bing!
Thing.
The door's like, are you here now? I am! I'm already here! Fuck, how do you get here so fast? I just leave your
bowling ball full of cocaine!
And by the way, it's only a tennis ball now.
I hope you didn't want any. I'm a bad motherfucker. Remember my movie that had that bad motherfucker wall in it? It's like, Jesus Christ, this is a mistake. After
the weird thing is he doesn't even inhale the cocaine through his nose. He just rubs it on his giant forehead. And it...
The giant forehead prosthetic he was wearing in... From Dusk Till Dawn.
The superfluous giant forehead.
The one where they like put it on the stuntman, like made him like ultra forehead, just like the biggest forehead ever known.
It's like we used the same one for Ted Danson. Like, oh, superfluous forehead. I get you. Oh man. Yeah. Brief anecdote. I saw Tarantino at Comic-Con several years ago, right before Grindhouse came out, and that was before he had really done anything that I thought was shitty, which, you know, so before, like, Kill Bill came out. So it was him and Robert Rodriguez on the panel.
Was Grindhouse before Kill Bill?
I hadn't seen Kill Bill yet, I guess, so hadn't been disappointed by it yet. But as I was like, God, these are my heroes right here. I wonder what Tarantino's like, and what he was like was, Grindhouse is going to be the best fucking movie ever! It's going to be awesome! Like, seriously, you guys have no fucking idea. This movie is going to fucking revolutionize the film industry, and it's going to be fucking rad, because fucking Robert Rodriguez is the fucking guy, and me, I'm fucking incredible, so you know this movie is going to be fucking incredible. There's Rose McGowan, she's incredible in the movie, she's fucking Robert Rodriguez, and that's fucking unbelievable. And it's like, oh my god, what is wrong with my idol?
He is a film nerd.
He's also made of cocaine.
Sometimes when you stare into the abyss chatters back.
Like, and Rodriguez was just like, yeah, this movie's going to be pretty tight. I feel pretty good about it. And Tarantino just kept interrupting, like, this is a fucking really good movie.
And Rodriguez was the one that actually had a little bit of the bragging rights in that movie because his segment was dope.
Could you imagine at some point me on a Comic-Con panel for a movie and just like, your trailer, it showed that the Vision isn't wearing his green and yellow outfit. Yeah, he's not. Why did you do that? It's not canon. Because you can fuck off in your mom's basement. That's why you can. That's why it's not green and yellow. Because yeah. I didn't want it to be green and yellow. It's crazy what you can do when you're the guy who gets to just run the thing.
Listen, Turbo Nerds, I'm here to discuss the brilliant casting of Ian Ziering as Iron Fist in my movie.
Yes, I can't believe you got the guy from Sharknado. Ah, the guy from 90210, who happened to be in Sharknado 1 and 2. Shark Strike Back.
Is there any talk of them bringing him back for the sequel? Because that would
they're bringing
be
Tara Reid back
amazing.
For sure.
That seems unnecessary.
Yeah, she really carried that movie.
You might as well. Oh, we brought the coat rack from the first movie.
And when I say she carried that movie, I mean she got pig's blood spilled on her at the prom.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Yes.
Well, and she carried lights to and from the grip truck.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, I mean, that was helpful. Yeah, there was like a rumor going around. Like, Sharknado 2, Sharknado Strikes Back, looking to not have Tara Reid return, and people apparently were outraged by it, because...
Who are these people?
It's just...
I don't believe
them. You gotta look at it like this, Matt. There are a few things people like more than complaining.
That's true.
And being outraged about Tara Reid, sure, that falls right. Sure, why not? Hmm. It is a slow complaining day.
Yeah.
If you can have like 100 comments on a thread about Superman's red underwear, which, by the way, I feel like it's part of the iconic costume, and it breaks up the block of blue that is his entire body. And it actually is a callback to the circus strongmen when Clark was growing up. But, you know, people are going to argue about that, and it doesn't mean anything, really, except, you know, it kind of sucks.
It makes him look less like Zangief.
That's true. They should have just had him in nothing but the underwear.
Yes.
Like, here you go, fuckos.
I bet that movie would have done
He's all underwear now.
Because
it's all the scene where he's stealing clothes.
You would have to do the, like, 3D conversion on the chest hair.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can guarantee a Wolverine sequel if you just keep Jackman shirtless through it.
Fucking DC pulling that move though, where they're just like, I can't believe you ditched the red underwear in those movies. Well, actually, in the comic now, he doesn't have that shit. So yeah. Actually, it's comic. It's canon and matches his outfit in the canon. And then like, the fans are just like, well, they're like, no. Next question. He's like, no, but it's not the same. It's not what it was when I was. Get out of here. Just you're dead to us. But make sure you give us your money. Yeah, we need that money to make that Batman vs Superman movie. Speaking of a Wolverine sequel, the new Wolverine is not very good.
That's what I keep hearing. Bums me out.
I was really saddened by how not good it was.
It doesn't feel like it should be so hard to make a Wolverine movie, because the X-Men movies are essentially Wolverine movies.
Yeah.
They have some other people around to break up the plot, but like X-Men 2 is a Wolverine movie. Like, that you can clearly do one that's good and engaging, so like I don't get why they can't.
It's still to this very day the best Wolverine scene we've gotten is in X-Men 2, where he just dominates that whole house full of forces.
Yeah.
That's still
yeah.
the best Wolverine sequence that we've gotten in a movie.
With his sequence in X-Men First Class being a close second.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
His single greatest F-bomb usage in film.
Yeah, someone posted a chart too that he's the dude that's played the character in the most movies of any comic book character ever, too, which is awesome because he's in like 7 fucking movies.
Well, also Hugh Jackman is just like, dude gave me my career. I want to be him forever.
Yeah.
Like, as long as I can keep physically being the character, I don't see why I would want to stop.
Yeah, I totally get that. That's awesome.
Which would be great if more actors felt that way, Robert Downey Jr. It's not like it resurrected your career, Robert Downey Jr.
It's not like that was in Pulp Fiction or anything.
I thought he was holding off on Iron Man because he wanted to get more money for his...
Well, no, he held off on, in general, because he wanted to get more money for everybody else. But the whole thing was before Iron Man 3 even started production, he goes... You know, you can only be Iron Man for so long before you've done everything with the character. And it's like, fuck you. You can do stories
forever
as Iron Man.
It's like,
well,
have you done it for 50 years like they have in the comic book? Because
it's like, you
sure.
only do so many Iron Man stories. You're right. That's why they canceled that book a long time ago.
That's why there were 10 issues.
Nobody wants to keep hearing stories about that guy.
Especially played by Robert Downey Jr. Like,
yeah. It's just so weird because it's just like, you know, there's a lot of other things I want to do. I get that. You want to do other things. I just want to go ahead and just kind of bring up the fact that, do you think those other things would have been offered to you before Iron Man made you into a movie mega god, number one highest paid actor in Hollywood, instead of a guy who used to break into his neighbor's house and do all their pills? And just kind of like sit there and just like, I kind of thought so too.
He's like, but I was Sherlock Holmes. Like, yeah.
You were Sherlock Holmes. After you were Iron Man, though, bro. It's like still an Iron Man related thing.
Yeah,
your whole career after Iron Man is Iron Man's fault. And we thank him for that.
Yep.
So there. So we watched a movie about a ventriloquist dummy?
I was going to say, Iron Man's face mask doesn't move at all, which is different from the doll in Devil Doll, who can move by himself. Even when nobody's watching. Anyway, that whole Quentin Tarantino thing was to say that on this commentary, he said that his three favorite ventriloquist dummy movies were Dead of Night, Devil Doll, and Magic.
Yeah.
So we watched them. And for the most part, I think we're kind of...
I mean...
No spoilers, but... It feels like there are probably better dummy movies out there than Devil Doll.
There was a Don Rickles... Was it a Tales from the Crypt episode? Or something where he is a ventriloquist and like the dummy's evil, and I remember enjoying that quite a bit, and I feel like I would put that above really any of these.
The weird thing is, Devil Doll's the only one of the three that has where the dummy is actually supernatural.
Yeah,
and it's probably the flattest of the three. I have a great surge of pity for you because you did not see it with the Mystery Science Theater stuff.
Yeah.
And had I known, I would have just had you over.
Yeah, I didn't end up getting around to watching it until this morning. I was just been too
busy. The weird twist is, like, I like to see a movie where it's just straight up the dummy supernatural, and he's a good guy, and the ventriloquist is, like, a serial killer, and the dummy tries to save people, but it's incredibly ineffectual due to being a dummy.
Dummy.
I was like, how about that for once, instead of, like, the dummy is either it's my suppressed psyche,
right?
Which, man, that is a movie premise. Every time a movie executive hears that, they must just, like, immediately go, open their wallet and just start handing money out.
Shut up and,
like,
take my money.
All right, so we got this idea, right?
I think it's so hard for us to imagine, though, that there's just a well-adjusted ventriloquist who he's practiced this art because he wants to entertain people, and when he's at home, the dummy is just in a box.
True.
It's really hard to imagine that he just doesn't ever stop talking to the thing.
Yeah.
Buffy did that, though. They had the good ventriloquist dummy who was the soul of some douchebag from the 20s.
I mean, which is basically what they did in Devil Doll.
Yeah, but in this one he was trying to stop the demon that was actually killing people but kept getting blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good.
Devil Doll,
that can happen.
It's, I mean, Devil Doll has it at the very end where he's like, I put his soul in the doll or whatever the fuck happened. Like, I'm his master now. Like, I don't care. I couldn't care about any of this.
I think that was supposed to be, like, the big, like, oh my God, reveal. And I was like,
That movie's less a movie about a ventriloquist and his murder dummy so much as it's about a guy who vaguely looks like Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Just hypnotizing people and making them dance.
With some of
the fact they did the entire song for that dance number was, I was just like, this is great.
That's very of that era. Our runtime's a little short. What should we do?
Let's throw in a dance number. How are we going to get a dance number in this ventriloquist
awkward
dummy?
White people
he's a hypnotist
number.
Too.
He hypnotizes her so that she's able to dance.
And I love that they actually, like, okay, you're going to dance now. And then, like, his, like, magician's assistant, like, escorts the other professional dancer that they travel with just to do this 2-minute bit. You know, like, ah, yes. Here comes Charles. He will dance with you.
And Charles kind of sucks, too.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Mac, you're telling me he's some kind of ventriloquist? I am.
Get
my God, my God, that'll make the front page of the papers. Just like, I don't know why that newsman is in this movie, but I fucking
love the presses.
I love that he's in there every time a major plot device happens and just kind of like, my God, the dummy's alive. Get me on the phone to New York and just like...
That thing can walk 4 steps and then bow. Oh my God. Something's going on. Somebody call Valiant and Valiant.
Just every time something of note happens, it just immediately cuts split screen to him running to a phone and telling him, just like, dummy walks, stop.
And then in the booth behind him, you can just see George Reeves step in and then whoosh. You're like, whoa.
That movie would have been awesome.
Yep. Every movie needs that guy.
Even if it's modern day, that guy's still in black and white running. Just like, Pete, we told you, we know that you're some kind of weird time-traveling displaced
and
man.
And use your
from
goddamn
the 30s.
Cell phone, Pete. That's why we're paying the bill.
You could
bring us receipts for payphones, you asshole.
Stop the presses. We're a blog.
It's the modern day. Payphones aren't even a thing anymore. How do you find one that prints receipts? It's just one, anyway. I'm just like, I got a new story of the century. All right, we'll just write it up on your laptop and send it in. No, I gotta tell you now.
I'm in a cab on my way downtown. No, we're working.
Well, I tried to use the fax, but I couldn't figure it out.
I got a telegraph coming in. I don't even know if we have somebody who can
do
get
that. Do we have
that?
Do we have one of those old stock market tickers? Maybe we can rig that up to work.
How do we get telegraphs here? How do we get what a graph? What? just someone in the tech department. How do we do what a what? To whom? So if that guy that we just made up was in this movie, we would have, like, a psycho attack the block type situation on our hands, a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Sadly, Pete, the newspaper man, is not in this film.
No.
There is a guy who spends a lot of time putting his face real close to the camera. The framing of these shots are unbelievably awkward. And throughout this movie, it's just like 3 inches away from a guy's face while he has a conversation with someone standing behind him, and occasionally, like, looks back to see her.
Yeah. It's
But while we explore every pore of his face, they keep getting close to the guy, the bad guy, whose entire face is made of acne scar.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's constructed of scar tissue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the right. It's got a lot of that, which you see in, I mean, this movie's not that early, but it's got a lot of the stuff you'd see in older movies where they're basically still just performing plays with a camera present.
Yeah.
Because it's got that whole, like, I'm going to walk downstage left and deliver to the balcony while you stand upstage right, you know, and I'm actually talking to you. And it's like, you're doing that, except it's a movie. So that has
and
no
you would
dramatic
expect that
impact.
From, like, the 40s, but
right.
Dead of Night doesn't do that, and that's
60s.
From the 40s.
Like,
yeah.
This is a little too late for that shit. But it's got that feel of being, like, a stage production that they just happened to film, which is fucking
Was
weird.
This a teleplay, or was it actually in theaters? Because that's... It's bizarre to imagine... It plays as kind of an extended Twilight Zone episode, and it's square, and that just says TV.
I don't see anything...
You're the square, Jack.
Why don't you get off the trolley, Charlie? That's a different guy. That's 20 Slam guy.
Yeah. Which best buddy cop of all time, Pete Newspaperman and 20 Slam guy, get displaced into modern-day New York and have to solve a mystery?
Stop the presses. Why don't you keep them presses running, Jack?
Just back.
I don't think you're the cat with the 411 on the 23 Skidoo.
I don't know.
His 411 is also 20 Slam. Yeah. You had to dial it with the, like, rotary phone back
I loved
then.
In the fucking Mystery Science Theater version that you and I both watched, when Tom Servo goes, how many hours of film have we all collectively lost due to watching someone dial a rotary phone?
And they do all, like, 12 digits.
I don't know.
They
that...
don't hold back.
I'm not going to call this definitive, but between the Wikipedia and the IMDb, the only information I can find is there's an estimated budget of £25,000, but there's no information on a theatrical release or
the Wikidibium.
What it brought in. So it may
also
have been
appears
something
to
that,
be filmed on video.
Yeah,
like
the aspect
BBC.
Ratio, yeah. It's,
it has that.
It might have been a BBC
look.
Thing.
So, since we're just going to have fun, clearly, just riffing away, because this movie has so very little to it. Basically, it's... There's a magician who is apparently just really fucking good. He's also a ventriloquist and a hypnotist.
Yeah.
And
three of the lowest forms of entertainment, actually. He's the trifecta of suck.
And he, for some reason, some cop is assigned to watching his show or something. Yeah. They don't really explain why, but we know the cop is upset about it, so he smokes often about it.
Smokes early and smokes often.
And he takes this rich... heiress to it, and she's forced to dance, and Bertoli, the pasta magician, fucking decides that he's gonna take care of, like, he's gonna marry her and then kill her to get her fortune, and all the while he keeps telling his dummy to, like, shut up, and he keeps him in a cage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
like,
that's,
there's not a big dynamic.
Josh and I were talking about that the fact that I think it's the cop even says, like, yeah, I saw a show, and it's just like the tension between him and the dummy is just... The whole room could feel it. And I was like, yeah, it's two people arguing with each other uncomfortably in public. And that's like, apparently, like, that brings the fucking house down. Like, they're
stop
selling
the presses.
Out
he's mentally abusing a dummy.
Right? But that's the
it's
thing.
A blog.
Like, there's none of that, like...
I want wine. Fuck you! You can't have any! I would actually... I would watch a ventriloquist.
It would be better if you were yelling, though.
As the dummy asks for anything, dude just flies off the head just immediately without just...
I could see...
you know what would be really great? If you shut your goddamn mouth for a second, you ruined my dreams. He's just up there so angry.
God, I want to see somebody get... through the audition process onto America's Got Talent. And start, you know, just like yelling at the dummy, eventually like punch the dummy and come away with bloody knuckles, and the dummy's like kind of coughing.
Missing
and, like,
some teeth and shit.
But you told me you loved me. Just like completely destroy the psyche of this fucking dummy on the stage until it is just like on the floor limp, but still kind of whimpering. And they're like, da, 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 da.
Could the end of the act be
jazz hands?
Like, after
hands.
Like the psyche is destroyed, the guy like comes out of his basically just rage-induced trance, and he's like, oh god, I gotta get out of here. He runs off stage.
Really picks up a suitcase and puts on a hat they weren't aware was even there before. Yeah, yeah. Just like,
well, yeah, it's misdirection. That's why ventriloquist magicianry works on the tube.
They're on to me. 23 Skidoo.
Ah. Look how he goes. He hops in a car with...
See, I'm the funny
Pete Newspaperman and 20 slang guy.
Actually, no, the first cab he goes to get, Pete Newspaperman's like, I need this cab, I got a hot story.
I got a mean lead. Just jumps in there, it's like, what was that? Why did he make that noise at the very end? And just shaking a hat and cigar and gets in the cab. It's like, I don't know what's happening with the future anymore. I don't know why guys from the 30s and 40s are just showing up and doing newspaper stories about stuff that's been done for like 60 years.
So yeah, our plot just kind of gasps along with these really incredibly awkward scenes with him like, let me tell you something, dummy. You're a stupid dummy. You can't have any ham. Why would you eat ham?
Dude, I
if I gave you some wine, the sawdust in your belly would swell up, wouldn't it? Yes. And he's like clearly evil bastard incarnate. Mm-hmm. So it's
but
weird that
for some reason people are like, I'll put down my 20 quid to go watch this.
Governor?
I was like, I want ham. You can't have any goddamn ham.
But you're a cannibal. What would make you a cannibal? Eating sawdust? What is that? In what realm does any of that conversation make any sense?
And they're just like, this guy is gold.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give all my money to this rich person's charity ball.
He's also kind of a shitty ventriloquist because Hugo's voice sounds so unnatural and flat. He sounds like somebody who's been practicing ventriloquistry for...
There's an argument to be made that it's not about how much you see the dude's lips move or how different the voice is. It's how much you believe in the embodiment of the character. I can't remember the guy. In the Aristocrats, there's the dude that has the ventriloquist dummy. Mm. And that's a dude you totally see his lips moving a lot. And the thing is, that's not the point. That's a dude who embodies that ventriloquist dummy so well that he was doing a street show in Central Park. An interracial couple walks by, and he starts making comments. The guy gets so pissed off, he stabs the dummy.
Nice.
And he's like, that's a good ventriloquist, that you're so angry at a puppet that instead of punching the teeth out of the ventriloquist, you stab the dummy. So, like, it's not about the mechanics of how well you do it. It's about how much the audience literally starts to treat that as a separate entity.
No, there's that dude at the Ren Faire who does...
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff is just sitting there with...
Jeff Dunham.
Yeah, no.
No, the good one, Jeff Nepple.
With the
and Jeff, the Jeffs.
Yeah, the two Jeffs.
But
he's just got like a paper bag on
his hand. Copyright, My Comedy Productions.
And he's moving his lips. You know, he's just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still looking at the puppet whenever he's doing the puppet voice.
Yeah, because Jeff's not even a ventriloquist at all. Jeff's a puppeteer.
Yeah.
And so he's just like, nah, when I'm Felton, I'm just talking with Felton, but no one gives a shit what I'm doing over here because they're all engaged because he, again, is like... crazy good at just embodying that character.
Where does Dunham come into the act? Because this is the Jeffs. It's not just
Dunham Foxworthy. Dunham is when you combine ventriloquism with racism. That's where you get the Dunham Nexus.
The Dunham Nexus. Well, racism and untalented meat.
Oh, he's talented. Come on, that kid's gold. He's dynamite.
That kid's gonna go far. I think I saw one Comedy Central special was on, and I was like, oh, I'll flip to this. And he had like a skeleton dummy.
Yeah, little dead terrorist.
And he's like, dead terrorist. And I was like, well, I guess I probably don't ever need to watch TV again.
We used to watch him when I was a kid because he was a clean comedian, so he was safe for us Christians to watch.
Because he doesn't say any actual words, but he plans horrible ideas.
Yeah, that was before the whole undead terrorist thing. Like, he had a jalapeno on a stick that talked with a Mexican accent, which is slightly racist, but not quite over the line. You know, but that was back when Robin Williams was doing all that shit.
Sure.
So, yeah, he was funny back in the day.
Yeah, Coda was really big into him. Like, my in-laws watch that. They have all his DVDs, and I'll go over there, and that's what they're watching. I'm like, oh, I guess I'll hang out in the kitchen.
Elevate yourselves, damn it.
I can't watch this stuff.
Popping a Louis C.K. DVD.
No, to be fair, they introduced me to Jim Jefferies, so, like, they watch good shit, too.
But... Emancipate yourself from mental slavery, Hugo, you stupid dummy. You ugly dummy, you evil dummy.
Find me. Find me. Get the fuck out of my room, walking dummy. No, seriously, I need your help. I swear to God, if you don't get the fuck out of here while I'm trying to sleep.
Find me in 1948. Stupid dummy. You don't know how time works.
For a second there, Hugo is supposed to be the, like, sympathetic character for a second. But then when Varelli wants to get rid of his assistant because, you know, she's getting a little old, as the, like, massive side boob we see when she rolls over in bed shows us she's not in the best shape anymore, mm-hmm. he just goes, by the way, Hugo, she said that you were ugly. And, like, leaves a knife and opens Hugo's cage. And Hugo just goes and murders someone for calling him ugly, which is what Varelli does all the goddamn time.
Yeah, so, I mean, is Hugo just, like, pent-up rage? Is that the problem?
He's just
like,
just
I'm
kind
a
of
ventriloquist
a
dummy now. Which, I, you know, I'd be pissed if I was woke up tomorrow and I was a ventriloquist dummy.
I mean, he could be like Chucky, though, and just use it. He could try and, you know, not, you know, accentuate the positives of being a dummy.
I think there are a few positives.
But there are at least one, right? There's like one.
Right.
Like, everlasting life is pretty fucking sweet.
But... yeah.
Not having a dick.
But at what price?
Yeah, I'm not saying that there's not a
giant... Is it weird
that
that's the first place I went to, and I was like, I'm not going to say that out loud. Not, that's like, okay.
I don't want this to be like, there's only like pros on this list. this is a con-free list. Transfer my soul into a ventriloquist dummy. ASAP. No, there's plenty of cons. Lack of dick being right at the top of the list.
Probably right up there.
I'm pretty sure that lack of dick is probably less of a concern for females who would be transferred into a ventriloquist dummy.
Sure.
But for this,
you're not going to have a dick when you go in there.
But for this very diverse table of white males.
And you're going to have somebody putting things inside of you all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a fist. Okay. Yeah, you know,
I went to college.
What? If that was how, like, yeah, somebody would be like, maybe put a fist in you. Yeah, I went to college. What? I wouldn't be shocked or grossed out. I'd just be like, what? It's a very odd. That was a very quick response, too.
So, did you take the 101 course, or did you go ahead and follow through? Because you don't really learn all about anything in a liberal arts class.
That's true.
Like, fisting 101, you only get up to, like, the second knuckle.
You get the really cool, like, progressive professor. This isn't your grandma's fisting course. That's taught down the hall. Oh, my God. There's a grandma
continuing adult education course.
Grandma's 601, yeah.
Just like, it's a master course.
It's like, listen, motherfuckers, I'm the cool professor teaching a goddamn fisting 101 class. Now, if you're really interested in fisting, you're probably going to want to go ahead and declare your degree path to get your PHF.
Because you can't get into the upper level fisting classes unless you declared a major of fisting.
Yeah.
Well, they book up so quickly.
Yeah. And you have a minor of like field medicine just in case.
You have to get poli-sci minor and fisting major.
I'm going for poli-sci and polyamory. I'm working on my S and MBA.
What kind of college is this?
The best kind.
I gotta. That's gotta happen. Just woo! We're so happy with ourselves.
Hey guys,
I want to top the Gremlins episode because apparently people like that one.
Can we though?
Other than us three.
Good old Hugo. By the end of it, manages to somehow do a soul transference
with the worst fight scene of all time.
Yeah. Doesn't he just kind of put his hand on Bertoli's head and fucking calls out to Dembella and fucking does the Chucky move and
pretty much pulls
the old Freaky Friday?
He's like, we just got to have the camera go to negative for a second and then...
And I thought that was the end of the movie. I'm like, oh, okay.
Then,
there's more movie.
And then you've got Varelli and Hugo's body going, help me please, you ugly dummy. I mean, you attractive fellow. I'm Varelli. You should probably help me out.
I'll do anything
you want.
How
the fuck, like, how could I even try to put you back in your body?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's a little beyond my pay grade, and Hugo isn't going to give up your body.
Probably not.
He saw us to talk with his fucking voice, though.
Yeah, that was weird.
The fucking Hugo.
Yeah.
There's a whole middle section of going to Berlin and finding the, like, back when I was a girl, I was in this act, and, like, cut to the 50-year-old woman still in the act. And, like,
yeah, and then girl. The dude with just no beard, so you can more clearly see his acne scarring.
Lord.
Yeah, man. How was the MST3K in this?
Tight.
Fucking funny. I would highly recommend.
Damn it.
Tom Servo gets his soul transferred into a toaster strudel for a while.
Cool.
And Crow is in the midst of trying to buy devil dolls from a devil, not the devil. And Mike is trying to exorcise him off the station.
And by the end of it, Mike is in a cage dressed as Hugo.
Excellent.
Very good. Yeah. It's choice, except you don't want to watch this movie again. But with the MST, it's tolerable. The couple of moments on stage where he's doing the puppet act, there is a just kind of unease to it. Like, I'll agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just in the middle of this kind of incompetent movie.
Yeah, so the movie's not well executed at all.
It's like the movie's a 3 out of 10. It's a great episode of MST. So yeah, if you can find it,
I feel like that's probably
then I'll give it 3 out of 10. You know,
if you can find it,
dummies.
You got yourself a winner.
Yeah, having sadly watched this without the delightful MST3K commentary, it is a fucking drag. You're right, there's tension in the scenes where he and the dummy are arguing on stage, but it's the kind of tension that, like, you have if mommy and daddy are fighting.
Yeah.
Or if, like,
yeah, that's why I say, like,
you know, if you're at a party and a couple that you know is suddenly starts, like, having a fight that's a little too real.
The weird thing is it doesn't work when he's arguing with the dummy off stage.
No.
None of that tension.
None of that, because then he's just like, meh. But, yeah, bad movie. I'll second the 3 out of 10 sawdust wine soakers.
Clean sweep, 3 out of 10. Just not very good. I could see where for the time period it could have been, wow, this is pretty amazing, but that's not really...
It's still not even the first movie to kind of address the crazy ventriloquist dummy
thing. You can
it's not that it's even groundbreaking.
There
that's
are like
the trick.
20 different, you know, there are probably 200 different Roger Corman movies from that 5-year span, and at least one or 12 of them are going to be better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weirdly like... The skill level in it is weirdly thrown back like 20 years. Like 20 years of movie making discoveries just haven't happened for this to hit the screen.
Yeah, which would lead to lend some credence to the idea that maybe this was just like a BBC production.
Yeah, I think if you ask people
directing soap operas
to say whether this or Dead of Night came first, I think people will probably say this.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because there's no 60s to it. Needed
except
some
for the music and the dance scene. That's the only thing.
Needed some tea, needed some A.
Oddly modern seeming.
All right, we'll see you in the funny papers, kid, but we'll also see you after this break. By the way, Double Doll, La Muñeca del Diablo.
I like that.
La Muñeca.
Muñeca. Hey, little girl, you want a muñeca?
So,
it turns out they probably would.
Before we jump into the next one, question for the hot doggies out there. Should, because I have the capacity to do it, we could come up with a art-themed title, like shirt print thing that I could put on the store every week, even if it's just something you want to look at. Not saying anyone has to buy any of the shit. Actually, I'm saying you do have to buy all of the things. But
obviously, it works out better for us if you do.
Yeah,
buy
if
them.
You do buy the things, it's great. If you don't,
God, just buy stuff.
But I mean, that's something we could do is if we come up with some goofy ass title. We could come up with some dumb thing, you know, much like Gremlinos from last week, which, thank you for the love that it's been receiving.
We should just take the title of every episode and put it in the, like, big hip-hop print for each one. I think that would be fine.
We could definitely do that. That would be...
Yeah, many of the titles,
that would be, be pretty easy to do. The, the Gremlinos one was a lot of fun to make.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
Of fun to make.
Yeah.
So perhaps more merch.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
So we're down to Dead of Night, or La Muerte de la Noche.
Nacho.
La Muerte de los Nachos. Except Dead of Night is not, in fact, a Spanish film. It's a British film. And because it is a British film from the 1940s, everyone talks very, very fast and very, very, very quietly.
And very crisply.
It's like, yes, it's nice to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
As you very well may know, I was a motocross driver.
Like, let me tell you about the time
well,
I very nearly died. Because, like, in America, you would say, like, dude, there was this time that I almost fucking died. And instead, so there was this time that I was in fear of my life. Actually, it nearly cost me my life.
Oh, not back then. The Brits would probably just, it would cut to America, and it would be still cowboys. And I was like, hey, partner. One time I almost got shot down. Just like, that is not how
with
we
a
talk.
Gun like this gun.
And then just devolves into just people dancing just around
firing
guns.
Sanding it everywhere.
I want one of these really proper British guys to say, like, razzin frazzin. I'll allow you somebody
great,
saying.
Yeah.
So this is 1945, and it is a teleplay. It's a BBC production. But it still feels more advanced than Double Doll does.
Yeah.
It's an anthology film where the segments are of really varying length.
Yep.
Which is interesting. That was a little bit interesting. You know, the architect comes to the English countryside to check out the house that he's supposed to renovate. Everything is weirdly familiar to him. The German, because of course he's German, psychoanalyst is not having any of it.
And it looks like he's never actually worn glasses before, because the couple of times he like takes them on and off, they look so unnatural. Like he's reaching back from behind his head to like and put them over his face. Like, what are you doing?
I thought it was really funny that it was very clear at that point in time that the whole concept of a psychologist is just what a quack.
Yeah,
and he's just there to rip everything. Like, I had this dream. That dream could have been a vision. Yes, but a vision is usually just you being a complete fucking retard. Like,
why don't you tell me all your stories so I can shit on them? Scheiße! Wow.
Yeah, they do have the early impression of psychiatrists are just like, if I give you about a sentence about me or a dream I had, you'll clearly know everything that is meant to mean and can interpret it flawlessly.
Well, it's really funny because, like, at that point in film, that was like a new thing, and I feel like in the like mid 40s. There was a lot of like, well, he's psychotic, and we need to bring in this specialist to analyze.
Yeah, because they were basically magic still.
Yeah,
you know, like this guy can look at a crazy person and tell you exactly what happened. I guess we still do that though, because we still have like the procedural shows that have like Bones or whatever, where they, you know, something happens.
Dude, Bones is a great show.
But we're still far from the, like, by the late 70s where magic is set, you have the like suggestion that you would go see a psychiatrist is something that somebody in LA would suggest that you do.
Yeah.
But you would be like, well, I'm not crazy. I don't need to go to no head shrinker.
Yeah.
And it's not until, what, 90s when it would be everybody's going to a psychotherapist and that's just a thing that everybody does.
Yeah, is where that became like, oh, it's no longer a thing that you'd have to do.
Yeah, well, because everyone in the 90s, everyone has feels.
Yeah.
Yeah, now we all have the feels.
Which has changed from that to everybody's on some antidepressant and that's fine. But back in the 90s, it was like, you're on Prozac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you just have like a boner all the time? Like, that is not even what that does at all.
But I mean, yes but not
because of that.
But not for the reason you think.
It's like I had an orgasm in the shower while I was using herbal essences, but I don't think the two are related.
Herbal essences, shampoo,
masturbation, ladies and gentlemen. It's me and my X-rated dummy. We're gonna go far.
Joe Newspaperman runs to a phone booth.
I got a hot story. Josh Knight, stop. Masturbating in shower, stop. Herbal essences, stop. Print that story. That's just a headline, and it doesn't make
any
sense.
It's not even a headline, it's just a list of things.
Whip it together. I gotta go. It just like zips out. It's like, can't even hang up the phone here. They're like, he like runs away from
make it into one of them listicles.
Wow, Pete, you know about listicles now. That's amazing.
Put it on BuzzFeed.
He picks up fast.
He has his old school typewriter and he pulls it out and just hands the paper. Now put this on BuzzFeed.
Jenny BuzzFeed, put that in.
You're doing it right.
Basically, Pete Newspaperman is Steve Rogers, but journalism related. we just stole Captain America and but made him just a journalist and just.
I gave the story to
13 reasons
secretary.
Why the 40s were better than now.
You submit that article every week, Newspaperman. We're not running it.
And my name is not Jennifer BuzzFeed. I work for a site called BuzzFeed.
All right, site BuzzFeed, then just put it up there. That's not how it works.
He's a Jewish guy named Site. Yeah. I actually like the way that this builds in between the segments with the architect having, like, things are vaguely familiar and he gets more and more full of dread and like,
he builds a new matrix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to break your glasses and then I'm going to end up hitting the girl and then, like, darkness falls and, like, wow, seriously?
Oh, man, I love the line where he's just like, I'm going to strike her savagely. I'm like, that is so dope. That he's just, hey, at some point, I'm going to fucking just punch your teeth in, lady.
Except it's more, and I'm going to strike her savagely.
I like when her mother shows up and is just like, but he was about to strike me savagely. Oh, I'm sure he can hit someone else. I was like, Britain! I just started laughing. I was like, I love it. I don't know why, but I think it's hilarious.
Well, there's something about that. It's like the Peter Cushing in the Hammer Horror Week, where he just... Mm-hmm. the more intense he is, the quieter he gets.
Yeah.
It's like, I bet you're thinking that you'd like to go and grab that thing on the wall there. But if you do that, my friend, then I'm going to have to... Wow.
Yeah, I should be forced to give you a sound thrashing.
I know what you were thinking. Did I fire 6 shots or only 5?
Fooled you. It's a sword.
Wow, he's really good at this.
You may fire when ready.
What, I can fire my sword when ready?
Just... Cushing, come on.
You may fire when ready.
Doesn't he just keep saying that over
you
and over
may notice that the sword has a small firearm attached underneath it. Yeah, I got it from a man named Cloud Strife.
This whole movie is filled with just kind of really great...
As you know, I've never had my photograph taken. And it's like, oh, that's right, darling, you haven't.
Yeah. Like, I love all of that shit where it's like, I've never done this. And then like the wife, like, oh, yes, that's very true, very true.
He's like, thanks, Maud.
I get to talk too.
I'm going to fucking strike you.
It is the 40s. Savage you are me. Property.
So the first story in it is the like the room for one more story that we've heard
a billion times.
Forever. Yeah. And
competently executed.
The stop motion car crash in the first thing was cool.
Mm-hmm. I do love the old school cars.
Yeah.
A bit of a stock car driver. And there's like one step away from chariots at that point.
Yeah.
I like the, when he talking, going back to the, where he's like, I'm going to strike her savagely. And he's like, I'll just stand next to Mr. Granger. He's much bigger than you. And it's like, I love that it was a simple period of time when just being bigger than another person equated that just, you would lose.
Apparently all a woman did is walk in the room and go, who's Alpha? Like, oh, gotcha.
Well, later which one of you are going to inseminate me? The biggest and strongest. It has to be.
Well, then we find that, like, in the goofy golf story, the two guys are like, I know, sitting on either side of the girl, we'll just play golf, and the winner gets the girl. And she's like, that sounds like a great idea. Yeah. I don't know why you didn't think of that before.
That would have saved us so much time. And it's like, what the fuck? Okay.
Winner gets my hole in one.
He did it.
Yeah.
straight up 40s line, though. When I first got engaged, it was like I had to find a birthday present for my fiance. And you know how hard it is to shop for men. It seems that they have everything they've always wanted. And I was like,
those were the times.
Yeah, just like, wow, that is the 40s. And like, he gets that mirror and it's like, I love it. Why don't you go make me a drink? And just immediately come, man. Like, these movies, that's a great present, Dane. Go make me some shit. Like, I just like, I saw that and I was like, you know what? I get it. I get why all the old rich white men want the 40s back, because they want to just be able to just say and do whatever they want to whomever they want. Just order, like, you know what I really would like? If you filleted me while I was at my speech tonight. Just like, oh, well, I could probably do that. Instead of like, that's really embarrassing. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, or, that sounds pretty kinky. No, it's just what you feel irrelevant.
It's just like, I don't care what you... This was more of a command type scenario.
Yeah, you realize there was no question mark.
I've never given you an order in my life.
It's funny because I was asking as a courtesy. I expected.
I was going through the motions of asking.
It's like, I expect it to be done. So like the 40s was just like, oh, I get it. I get why.
Oh, yeah.
Inconsiderate fucking D-bags want the 40s back.
Yep. Because now you're like you're the shitty dude and a wife beater on the couch going, hey, baby, could you get me a beer? And you're like the object of ridicule, you're ridicule and scorn. But back then, it was like, I say, darling, would you mind making me a cocktail? And, of course, just runs off and does it. And that is how things are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah, all these movies are just old enough that the female characters themselves are constantly acknowledging, but I'm just a silly woman.
Yeah.
You know me, I can't make up my mind. I'm a woman. And it's like,
oh, yes.
Wow.
Don't we all know that? And they all kind of like laugh like, about it. It's laughable how silly and dumb and dim-witted women are.
But you know me, I'm only a silly woman. And they're like, oh.
Women.
My natural gender-related frailty. Yes. It's like, wow.
My very clearly weak agenda is like, that is, no woman would ever say that to anyone. But, in that same mirror sequence, after his fiance makes him the drink, and he thinks that he sees something in the mirror, and she's like, what have you been drinking for lunch? Pine bitter every day. I was like, I love
for
the...
breakfast. Yeah, that's
like,
the thing.
It's just like, I love the fact that the first meal every day at some point in time, it was very acceptable to just fucking rip back a pint, just a big fucking pint of beer.
And a 20-ounce pint at that.
Yeah.
Because they're British.
True. Yeah, the imperial pint.
And I also like the follow-up. What should we do this evening? Spiff up? Spend a lot of money? Like, God, this sounds great. I don't give a shit if he has, like, crazy murder beer.
I straight up ripped that line off and said that tomorrow when she got home. And she's like, sure, we can go to dinner and stuff. And I was just like, all right, well, let's go. I was just like,
huh. Excellent. So maybe they were on to something.
Well, I feel like, regardless of the time, if you suggest to someone that you want to take out on a date to, like, get dressed up all fancy, go to a nice dinner, and spend a bunch of money, if that person, you know, is into you, probably was like, yeah, that sounds like a badass time if I'm not spending the money. Like, if it was somebody who's just like, hey, Adam, I want to take you out to a nice dinner. If Josh was like, I want to take you out to a nice dinner, let's wear tuxedos.
All right. Yeah, sounds boss.
That sounds pretty cool. Tight. Yeah. We're going to spend a bunch of money. Well, I figured tuxedos. Doesn't...
Then
we're not
going
to go to Arby's.
No.
Are we going to Arby's?
We're in the Arby's drive-thru, and I'm ordering 150 meals.
All cordon bleus because they're not on
the
menu.
If you're going to spend $100 at Arby's, you only have to order like four things because fucking Arby's. Mm-hmm. So we skip the second story, which is short. Mercifully, it's the like ghost story where the girl goes upstairs to get away from the loudest and most creepy dude imaginable.
Mm. And oddly, like, infantile adults.
Yeah.
It's like, I thought
a slumber
party.
I mean, they're supposed to be in their teens, but still, yeah. Like, a teen slumber party is more like, group! And less... Just, let me tell you something, honey. We should go and hide. It'll be great. Like, oh, fuck's sake. Why
We're
do you
gonna
have
play
to
play sardines!
Be-
Bob's your uncle.
He's like, how about I sit here and put my arm around you? And she's like, how about I go and tuck the little ghost boy into bed?
Yeah.
And that's fine for her. But that's mercifully brief. The mirror segment is the strongest one in the set, I think. More so than the ventriloquist dummy is the...
Yeah, the reason we're here is actually not particularly great either.
Yeah, the mirror has, like, you know, the building tension. You know, the guy slowly losing his mind. I love the scene where he's killing her and suddenly she can see what he sees in the mirror and herself in the whole thing. And
yep.
That's
pretty tight.
Pretty glorious. And the fact that they break the mirror and get away, I kind of like that.
Yeah, that was pretty rad.
Mm-hmm. Although it's funny, in the middle of that segment, he's having his breakdown because of the mirror. And she, you know, does the stand in front of the mirror and look at it until you see you. And he's like, okay, we're done. And then they keep the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, you could probably just get rid of it and be safe.
Yeah.
She's like, you haven't tried to strike me savagely yet. You know?
She spent, like, 5 pounds on that mirror. There's no way that that's going back.
Yeah.
So our...
But to be fair, the mirror weighed, like, 15 pounds, so it was actually a good investment.
Yeah, that's true. So our actual ventriloquist dummy sequence in this movie. What do we think of that?
Yeah. The dummy is Hugo again.
Pretty much.
It seems like Devil Doll owes a debt. Dead of Night,
mm-hmm.
because Dead of Night has had that cache of like this is the ventriloquist dummy story for a long time now. So,
but also as a Brit killing an American, there's that little like fun. Fuck you guys!
Like, in the lead up to the war,
yeah.
We don't have to talk about the golf one. That was pretty ridiculous.
And then in the end, we get the whole business of. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. We get the fucking Biggie Smalls move.
Yeah.
And he relives the same day over and over again. He's basically Groundhog's Day. Not funny, but also doesn't have, Andy McDowell in it?
Yeah.
So you win some, you lose some, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing is I didn't quite get... Was there a lesson he was supposed to glean from living this over and over?
Oh, no. This is before anything was supposed to happen.
Yeah, he's just stuck in the horror.
Just stuck
of
in that one thing of doing it over and over.
Okay. I do think that this ventriloquist segment did it better than Double Doll, because it just having the angle of the psychiatrist in there and him kind of uncovering the story, you don't have any of the bullshit about going to Berlin and finding it's really a spirit or any of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have the guy at the end being completely creepy because he's now taken on the persona of the dummy.
Yeah.
So like, they did that in like 20 minutes, and that's about as long as you can do for that story.
Yeah.
At the end of it, when the architect is kind of freaking out because he's strangled the psychoanalyst, everyone's like gathering around and going, there's nothing to be afraid of. We're your friends. We all want to help you. I'm like,
huh. Yeah.
I do like him running through all of the stories.
Yeah, there were some good setups there and little transitions in there.
I need to get to Joe Mira. Like, there are nice little ideas there. Overall, it's still, as much as I like old movies, both the older ones we watched today kind of fell a little flat.
There were some pacing problems, and the plots were...
They ended up being more British than good.
Yeah.
I liked this probably more than you guys did, a little bit.
I didn't dislike this movie. I would say that I would give it like a middle of the road, like a 5 type scenario, where it's just kind of like,
It was, I mean, it's like a ham sandwich with no like mustard or mayo.
You can't have
it's
ham.
Just, well, I can't. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, okay, you technically have created this thing that can be good, but you haven't put all the extra shit into it that makes it really good. Mm. You know, like, it is just, you know, it's a ham sandwich with just meat and bread.
Like, yep, technically that fits the definition of the ham sandwich, but none of the interesting shit is on there.
See, I do like the going for, in most of these, just that little moment of, huh. That the, you know, like the two-sentence horror is all about just getting you to go, yeah, for a second.
Yeah, just expectation.
And this hits it a couple of times. In, like, in the mirror segment and the ventriloquist segment, you do get the, like, a little bit of a frist on.
A what?
So, a little chill.
Oh.
In back of your neck.
You get a little frisk on.
A little frisky.
Apparently that's the thing I'm not aware of.
I'm about to get my frisk on. Hey, I'm going to frisk you. No, you're not. I said I was getting my frisk on. And they're like, oh, well then frisk away.
Yeah, I think I'm in the middle of the road on this one, too. It's, yeah, like a 4.5, 5 out of 10. It's watchable.
I'll give it a 6 out of 10. I think there's a reason why it resonated with people for a while. It's definitely an older style of horror, but there are moments of genuine horror in it.
I feel like 5 and 6 on our rating scale should just be the soundbite from The Great Muppet Caper, where it just goes, hey, a movie! Just like, that's basically all we're saying is, it exists. It is neither good nor bad. Like, it lives in that meh space.
But I think, so our next movie, final movie of the week, was Magic or La Magia.
I loved it.
Which turned out really well. So screenplay by William Goldman, Princess Bride, dude. Hmm. Directed by Sir Richard Attenborough. In between making dinosaurs come back to life on Isla Nublar. And starring Anthony Hopkins and Anne Margaret. And Burgess Meredith.
And Burgess Meredith, yeah.
I think, so well, it's, I think you put the billing in the wrong order
it's
there.
It's starring Burgess Meredith, yeah, and it happens to have Anthony Hopkins and Anne Margaret without a shirt on at some point.
Anytime I see Burgess Meredith, I think, quack, 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 quack.
Well, yeah.
I think
Twilight Zone is kind of where I go first.
Oh, and...
it's Rocky.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. That's a good one.
Don't forget also David Ogden Steers, Charles Winchester III, and that Cogsworth from Beauty and the Beast is the TV executive who comes in at the beginning.
Oh, right.
And has like one of the top billing spots, even though he's in there for like 3 minutes.
Anne Margaret's husband in the movie Duke is, for the gentlemen who have seen Not Another Teen Movie, which I hope everyone has. Not just gentlemen and ladies.
That's probably
and any denomination you want to put on yourself, gender wise or others. Yeah. Duke, the husband, is the fucking football coach. Like, God damn it! Yeah. We're gonna get our goddamn asses kicked on goddamn Friday. God damn it! When I saw him, just like all I could do is go. I love that part. I'm just like fucking just chuckling more out of the God damn it guys in this. And I was like, fuck, I really like that movie. So it's got a really good cast. Starts off with what I think is like that I really enjoy is Anthony Hopkins telling the story to his sick and dying father.
Yeah.
That he went to this amateur night and... But it wasn't amateur night. It was his show. It was his show, and he just killed. And in actuality, like, nobody gave a
just ate
fuck.
Shit.
Yeah.
And then he just loses his shit on the audience. And it's like, that's 1,000 fucking hours of my life. And just, you know, just goes berserk on him. I thought that as, like, a lead-up was really cool. I'm like, all right. So we already have placed that Corky has a little bit of trouble with reality right out of the gates.
Also the fact that his dad sees right through him, too, by the end of it. He's like... So, it really didn't go that well, did it? Like, did you use your charm? You know I can't do that. And I like the idea that in the, like, Sam Kinison age of comedy, that act probably would have gotten him booked on Carson or something.
Yeah, it worked for Hicks, I mean.
For just, like, God damn it, that was a hard fucking trick! I mean, the aces stand up, you pieces of shit, and I could see an audience really getting into that.
Yeah, I mean, that is the insurmountable task of being a magician or a juggler is if you can juggle 9 clubs, some of those things go, oh, cool, a guy is juggling. And it's like years of practice to get that good. And it's just like, but you can't convey the difficulty of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing it well, it looks effortless. And that's right. The problem with all magic and juggling and a lot of those kind of performance arts.
Physical performance arts and like other visual arts, which actually, oddly enough, the idea of if you're doing it well, it looks like you're not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
It's actually the mantra of visual effects. If you're doing it right, nobody notices anything.
Yeah.
Which is
really sad.
Yeah,
that monster.
It's like when I hear that, and it's just like a juggler could be working for like 10 years to learn how to do. It's like, fuck, I know how that dude feels. It's like, yep. look at this. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And it's like, look at Optimus Prime flying and kill all those robots. Yeah, I guess that was cool. No, it looks fucking photo real. That's what it looks like. Just like eat shit.
Like, and the shitty thing is a guy who's a slightly shittier juggler but a better showman will win every time.
Mm-hmm.
If he's juggling three pins, but he like
but
drops one at the beginning and then kind of gets a little bit sweaty and then starts picking it up and doing some patter while he's doing it, and then you're on this journey with him to see if he can do it, and you know, like, he's going to get more applause for shittier tricks. I know the fire blowers at Ren Faire feel that way too.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, God, that dude can barely fucking blow fire. How come? Like, well, he makes it look hard.
It's the stuff they're going around. It's the ornamentation often instead of, you know, people don't necessarily look at like how sturdily built the interior of their car is and like all the engine and shit. They go, oh, it's just comfy. I like the color.
That's kind of what...
That's how it goes.
The Anthony Hopkins character learns by the time he puts the dummy in the act is... Mm-hmm. The magic is not getting me anywhere. How about...
No one can ever respect the work.
We redirect with the dummy and then make it seem like it would be an impossible trick to switch out the card in the dummy's hand and then do that.
Yep.
And have the dummy react surprised.
Yeah, that was actually a pretty good bit. Because like when Burgess Meredith is sitting down with whoever and he's like, nah, you gotta watch this. And we were watching the guy just eat shit. I'm just going, this is like every horrible flop sweat situation I've ever been in. And then when he actually goes off after the heckler... I was just like, oh, shit, son. This is getting real. This is like every fantasy I've ever had. And then when he comes back up with the dummy, I went, oh, no. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Like, that's a good act.
What I thought was really fucking rad was Burgess Meredith just putting the TV exec in his place and just like, magic bombs on TV. Your father made his career working for me. You don't tell me what bombs.
You just like farts.
Yeah, just like Burgess Meredith basically just... I fucking made your family. Just, you show some goddamn respect. I was Mick and Rocky in the future. So,
stop the presses.
Yeah. So Jeff Eaton is like, talent agent is boxing manager in a future movie. And just like, stop. Just,
how did you know?
He always knows. Pete Newspaperman will always know. So, he gets... He gets fat, and the act turns around. He becomes kind of this, like, real deal Holyfield as far as lounge acts go, and he's booked by everybody. He's on, even he's been on Carson, right? After, like, the next set?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Because they do the cigar, take two, they're big.
And that was, if I remember right, because I watched this one late at night where I was a little groggy. This is one where I was like, wow, like, the levels and the steps and the names they drop in this movie are all really good touchstones that we can all recognize. As opposed to being, oh, yeah, you're going to go do the big show tonight and whatever. Like, no, they drop the name so we can all go, oh, okay. I understand exactly how big that is. Like, that's really cool. You know, like, all those things, I think, add to knowing how this, like, career is charting for Hopkins' character, which I thought was cool. Unfortunately, he's named Corky. That bothered me the whole time.
I will never stop thinking of that show, Life Goes On.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is Corky is now Corky. And forever the Down Syndrome kid from Life Goes On. Like, yep. it just is. Oh, man, look at that. I'm looking at the trivia on IMDb, and it says here, star billing, Anthony Hopkins first, Anne Margaret second, Burgess Meredith third. That is a crime.
But
and Anthony Hopkins again fourth.
Yeah, just again.
As fans.
I just love the way that this movie looks. Like, it just, the 70s,
gorgeous on this,
the 70s 16mm film style, that
it's very of that era.
Just so good looking. Like, the movie's just like, wow. Like, in the shots when Duke and Corky are out in the boat, and there's, like, this mountains behind them, and just, like, everything about it is just super awesome looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, shit, we're watching a movie about a murderous dummy, but it's like, this movie is fucking well shot.
That's weird. Like, there's a whole lot of prestige in front of and behind the camera thrown at this really kind of ridiculous premise. And I think that's why it sells.
Yeah. I really like the idea of when he's talking about the first performance, and it's like, were you the only magician? And it's like, yeah, all the men wanted to be Bob Dylan, and all the women sang Dolly Parton songs.
Yeah.
I was just like, that's a cool, like, that's a cool line, too. I was like, that's a really badass moment.
Yep.
I like that we get him as a lovable loser before he gets successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want him to win even though he can't. And that's something I don't think we see as much as we used to. We still see characters as losers in a lot of movies, but there's nothing really lovable about them. It's just kind of like, oh, here's another fuck up. You know, they're more Seth Rogen and Knocked Up and less Anthony Hopkins and Magic these days.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. But my last note on this movie, before I just kind of got taken in by it, is just Burgess Meredith is a fucking man.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it says.
Well, when you get the, like, he loses his confidence and doesn't want to take the very next step to becoming famous. So he goes and finds his old high school sweetheart, whose husband is absent, but, like, he's just gone for a couple of days or something.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
He moves in real quick. But having Burgess Meredith find him, and he immediately can tell that he's cracking up. It's like, I just heard you arguing with your dummy from outside. And I love the frantic, like, no, it's all part of the act. Listen, I'm doing the act right now. Here's the act.
New bit.
I haven't worked this up to performance level, but you got to just go with me. And
I thought that Burgess had... was like, it wasn't that he heard him from outside, it's like he was in the doorway, yeah, like midway through it, and it's like, dude, there's no, you're not gonna sell me on this being an act.
Yeah.
You know, and I really like the whole, well, we'll talk about getting you your shot as soon as we get you some help, kid.
Right.
Like, Burgess Meredith is like very visibly shaken that Corky has hidden how mentally broken he is for how long.
Because the whole reason that he takes off and tries to give him a little sabbatical is because he has to do the medical test.
Right.
To be certified by the studio or whatever it is.
Because they were going to drop $500,000 on the special.
Yeah. And so, but like that, and clearly he doesn't want to do it because he's crazy. And so when Meredith offers the excuse of you're afraid of success, he like latches onto that pretty quickly. And Meredith, I think, was willing to believe it at that point, and then at this house now, he's like, oh, no, this is why. Like, yeah. And that amazing scene then of, okay, put the dummy down for 5 minutes. And just don't...
Yeah, and the constantly checking.
Yeah.
And, like, just the silence and the tension there was just like...
Yeah, Josh and I were talking about that before we recorded. It's just like, we're going to get a real-time 5 minute.
And just like...
Let's see if he can
And
do
just
it.
The...
Minute 40.
And, like, in Burgess Meredith's voice, you can feel that he's trying to pull... For Corky, like, he wants him to make 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's like,
but he knows for a fact that it's not going to be the case.
I love that he has his number the entire way through.
Yeah, because that's like right from the beginning of that, when, you know, Hopkins is all uncomfortable and sitting there, he's like, well, yeah, how long has it been? 30 seconds.
And as the audience, the time is spooling out. Like, we're experiencing it from Anthony Hopkins' perspective. Mm-hmm. When he said, it's been 2.5 minutes, I was genuinely surprised.
Because
it seemed like it, oh, well, clearly he's going to make it.
Yeah.
And I actually felt for a minute like he could, and then it would just go but I think that's a different direction from there.
Yeah, like you were saying, Adam, like you do root for him. You would like him to get his shit together and then have a better conflict of him overcoming the dummy, but it's like, no, he's so far gone.
It's just that...
You know, it's like putting the pile of heroin on the table in front of the junk and be like, if you can look at this but not take any for 5 minutes, then I'll take you out for ice cream. And it's like, probably not going to win that bet. Probably not.
I do love the just explosion of Fats when he gets back up on the arm and he's like,
just rants for a minute. And it's just like, okay, now that you've vomited up the last 4 minutes of repressed Fats talk, like, yeah.
I love the kid. I've lived through Tallulah, Bankhead, and the death of vaudeville. I don't scare easy.
It's good
shit. People who pronounce vaudeville as vaudeville are okay in my book.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll take it.
That extra syllable just says they're that cool. I love the dummy going, stop the postman. And he's like, what? With what? Me! Like, holy shit. Like, that whole scene could have been really funny with the, like, dummy screaming as he comes flying in and whacking him with the head over and over, but I found it pretty harrowing.
No, I think it actually works.
Well, yeah. That whole argument between Fats and Anthony Hopkins where he's screaming at him is like, fuck, this is, like, Oscar-level, like, freak out right here. Yeah. This is
because it really shows you who's holding the leash in that relationship. And
you know, and then the end where it's just like, touch the ceiling, jump, turn, and just like, oh shit.
He's like, you are totally my bitch.
Yep.
It's like, you're my dummy, not the other way around. And that was like, that's awesome. Like, it's nice to see. I mean, it's, you know, now it's a totally cliche thing to be like, the dummy's in control of me, but to see it executed that high level that early on, it's like, wow, that's really badass.
Yep.
I also, going way back to the beginning, I love the way the title card comes in, Ultra 70s style, this white glowing magic, and then it disappears really fast. That was lovely. Another small piece, but a very big piece, was, and this is a
Aunt Margaret's boobs.
Or boob.
Boob.
It was awesome to see
the right one.
Her boob.
She let the right one out. We had
in a very natural scene. Yeah. That, I liked how like that scene felt like very much so like two people post-coital having a discussion and not like movie post-sex where it's just kind of like, you know, one day I'm going to be the world's greatest astronaut pilot. Yeah, me too. I'm just like, what the fuck is this conversation?
With
like,
the one sheet, that half of the sheet pulled up to the girl's neck and the other half down at the dude's waist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is just like, yeah, they're both just sheets down here and they're both just kind of talking.
Yep.
And, you know,
it's nice and casual. Yeah. Yeah, it's just very familiar.
I also like that Anthony Hopkins says that her breast should be in the Louvre.
Yeah.
It's a museum in Paris. I'm going to take you there.
That's awesome.
That little speech interspersed with the, also I would like some coffee, and I, you know, last night was the three best things that have ever happened to me. And also, I take it with cream and sugar.
I like
the, that's the thing. The, those moments of humanity just really sell it.
I like the, I whittled you a wooden heart. And it's like, oh, but you never gave it to me. And it shows him, like, throwing it on the ground when she goes off with the other dude. And it's just like, that's pretty.
And then he says, I lost it. Because he just can't stop lying.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about Anne Margaret, though, in the 60s, she is sex on a stick. She is one of the most, like, the hottest, most just pure animal sexuality women in the world. In this, she looks kind of old and maybe with the city miles on her, you know. But in Grumpy Old Men, or is it Grumpier Old Men that she comes in?
She's in the first.
She's in both. Yeah, yeah. She looks fantastic again.
Yeah.
And I mean, in this,
her level of bangability is very strange.
Anne Margaret could still get it in Magic, as far as I'm concerned. Like, she's one of, like, when Mara came home and I was watching, I was like, I got to see Anne Margaret's boob. And she's just like, what? Is like, I'd never known that she did something where she was topless in it. This is kind of a moment for me right now. This is incredible.
Like, it's a moment I don't really want to share.
And just like, I'm just really happy about it. She's like, who's Anne Margaret? I was like, well, she was in the movie Tommy, and she's a sex symbol. She's in Grumpy Old Men, but I don't want that to be the one thing that you think that I'm excited about. But that's probably where you know her from.
Mm. Yeah, it's like when you say, like, Sophia Loren, you don't want to say, she was the hottie in Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, she was like the hot old broad in Grumpy Old Men. Like the really old broad? Yeah, but she's still pretty.
You're thinking of Estelle Getty.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
But, the one thing I did not like was the hook at the end. I didn't like her walking out with the heart and then talking in a female version of Fats' voice.
I thought she was just doing that because, from her perspective, the whole time when he wants to be cute, he's talking in the dummy's voice.
And I took it the same way you did.
I didn't
take that as anything sinister.
The way that it's widely held is that her character the whole movie is flipping back and forth between two personalities, too, and she has personality splits, which is why we can't leave until Duke, and then the whole, like, he basically is like, yeah, I tricked you into fucking me,
mm-hmm.
and then makes her feel really stupid, and is like, get out of here, I hate you, and then he apologizes, and then the changing the mind in the end, she, like, throws the heart, and it's like, and that's why you get tomorrow, and just, like, out of nowhere that comes out. It's like, the widely held belief is that she is also messed up mentally.
Yeah, I think that's bullshit.
So,
yeah, I don't see that in the...
I mean,
that wasn't the reading I got on it. I feel like, yeah.
I thought she was just being cute because she doesn't know he's dead.
The end of it, I don't think it was any kind of mental thing. I just thought it was stupid. I was just like, it's just dumb. Her character doesn't do anything like that. She's being cute and feminine the whole time. And then out of nowhere, she just talks like that. Her character the whole time, there's no rhyme nor reason to it for it to be the very last thing that happens other than it to be a shocker at the very end.
Kind of.
Like, that's the only reason it happens.
Yeah.
I really think that she's just trying to take on his...
I think she's just trying to be cute, but I think you're right, probably tagging it on there to be creepy.
But it's doesn't make any sense.
I think it would if you've been hanging out with a guy who's doing a ventriloquist dummy voice all weekend.
Yeah,
and
at some point
to show that you're totally into him and the way that he communicates, you throw that in to be cute. Sure.
I would totally disagree after the fact that they, like, had sex and spent all that time together and not once does it come out until the very end of the movie. Like, it's done entirely for shock value.
Oh, I don't think they were trying to set that up at all.
No, it's not like it's done for a shock value, not like it's
she's going to be even, like, a sequel or anything. It's just that it's that line delivered like that at that point in the movie serves no purpose whatsoever other than to be a shock. And
let's just show it. How, like, cute and giddy she is.
But she's been cute because and giddy. She has something that we don't know. She's been cute and giddy the whole time while they've been talking with
but
Bats.
But sometime has to be the first time you do it.
Yeah, but it doesn't... If you're doing
the timing
it,
is perhaps
as far
suspect,
as far as where it happens in the script and the pacing of the movie makes no sense for that to be.
No, because she has just had, she's mad at him. The dummy, he comes with the dummy and does his adorable thing where he leaves the heart and everything. So of course that's forefront in her mind. Like he got out of this argument by using his cute dummy voice. So I'm gonna, you know, borrow his shtick for a second. I took it. I thought it was just fine.
Agree to disagree. I'm just not socially awkward enough to let that be something where it's like, that just is fucking so out of regular person character.
So, what do we think for this one overall?
Character. I love the how detailed Fats is as a dummy. The closer you get to him, the more... Just like, there is no reason why, in God's name, he should have a mouth full of teeth and, like, taste buds on his tongue. He's just... Yeah. The more you look at him, the creepier he is.
According to the IMDb trivia, they sent Fats home with Anthony Hopkins so he could practice with it, and he was too creeped out by it and called, and the director had to come pick up the dummy that night because he said he was going to chuck it into the cannon if it stayed at his house.
That's funny as hell.
Which, to be fair, ventriloquist dummy, pretty fucking creepy. Puppet, not creepy. Ventriloquist dummy, creepy.
I love the tension in the scene with him on the boat where he snagged something and he's afraid that it's Ben and has the oar ready to strike. And then, it's not Ben, but Ben's body is up on the shore.
Yeah.
Great. I love the, for a minute you go, oh, holy shit, the puppet is actually stabbing Duke. This is a different movie than I thought it was. And then Anthony Hopkins is behind the curtain the whole time. Yeah. That's the reverse Polonius for those of you who
Yeah, I liked that it was, English majors. There was nothing supernatural in this one either. I liked that they kept that consistently.
I love that the dummy has his own theme. And, like, during the love scene, there's that swelling orchestral score, and then the dummy is just the, like, two notes on the harmonica over and over, and kind of dissonant with the love score.
Interesting.
Yeah, anytime something creepy is happening with the dummy, it's just do-do-do.
I suppose, yeah.
Dope.
I like that it had that, like, little creep out underneath. That was dope.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought this was... I think I didn't like it as much as you guys did, maybe. But, it's probably the best example of the three this week, if you're going to try to do a ventriloquist dummy thing.
Yeah, that's
you know,
that
I feel
story.
Like the Descent into Madness is better with Hopkins and Fats than it was in the segment of Dead of Night, because they also had just more time to develop it. Certainly, that helps. But I think I like the way they did it better. And then because there's no goofy Freaky Friday soul switcheroo thing, you know, it's just one man's breakdown. You know, which is, I think, a better story in this case.
I think they were smart to not have a moment in which you just have Anthony Hopkins talking in the dummy voice and, like, moving his mouth because he's the dummy now.
Yeah.
Because they've done that. They did that in the other two movies. But I love this one where before you see that he stabbed himself, you have the dummy going, you know, I don't have a stomach, but it's kind of weird. Like, my stomach hurts. And then you see the giant wound that he's inflicted on himself instead of killing her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, good times. So yeah, I'll go like a 6 out of 10 on this guy as well, I think.
I would have to give it like an 8 out of 10 surly Burgess Merediths.
The best kind.
I would give it 8 out of 10 puppet beatings. Let me pose this question to you gentlemen. There are a couple different people that were originally projected to be Corky.
Yeah.
First and foremost, Jack Nicholson.
I think that would have torpedoed it.
They wanted Jack Nicholson.
He can't be normal.
But he turned it down because he didn't want to wear a hairpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
Second...
I think he would have been too crazy the whole time, and therefore...
Second choice, or second front runner, I should say, in the Attenborough didn't want him, but... As far as the production company went, Gene Wilder was...
That I could see working.
He could probably have pulled it.
But Attenborough said he did not want comedians in the movie. Like, he didn't want a comedian in the movie.
I could see that.
And also, Burgess Meredith's role was originally offered to Laurence Olivier.
Hmm.
and he just couldn't. Couldn't make it work.
Scheduling or something.
Scheduling wise,
you gotta have that like old Jewish agent with the voice and everything.
Yeah, I feel like, and again, like we kind of said before, like I put Burgess Meredith in anything.
Yeah.
You can't have too much.
I guess according to Attenborough, there's a quote in the list that I was just looking at that he says that Anne Margaret is the least emotionally appreciated actress of her era. She's the least appreciated actress for her tonal delivery.
She throws it down. She has a lot to do in this movie.
But, I think she's really talented.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I come from an era of not knowing anything other than her being a movie star forever.
Right,
you know,
sure.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I thought this was really good. It's probably the best ventriloquist movie I've ever seen.
So,
yep.
To wrap up then, overall, do you think the ventriloquist dummy as plot device for a horror movie works?
I think it can work. I don't know.
I still don't feel like the best movie of that, like the Shining example of that exists, but that might be that there isn't
I think there's a Shining of the Sea somewhere
yeah.
in there, but I don't personally know how to get the best one. I don't know what the best one is.
Magic is close.
But Magic's really good. I mean, I really am really happy with it. I don't know how I've never heard of I'd never even heard of this movie.
I remember seeing the box art a long time before I knew who Anthony Hopkins was.
Sure.
I'm just going, oh, that's some creepy doll movie. The thing is, you either have to go the Child's Play route and have it be a supernatural doll, and then you have to surmount the obstacle that your killer is like 2 feet tall.
Right.
Or you just do the Descent into Madness, and that depends on how good your actors are and how well they can sell it. And you're still limited with what you can do with that setup.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Magic is close. Something in, if you're going to do it, I think you got to be in that vein. Otherwise, you're just doing another Chucky movie.
Yeah.
Which comes out in October.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's, I think most people, like a lot of people find clowns creepy, I think a lot of people just find a ventriloquist dummy creepy.
Yeah.
So, like, that makes it kind of a natural, what about that? That's the thing that creeps people out. But I think you're right. The execution is where it then falls apart. Because they go, oh, creepy ventriloquist dummy. Good. Good start. Now what?
Huh. Did we mention he's a creepy ventriloquist dummy?
Right, and I think that's where a lot of those movies stopped.
It was they tend to go the next step to, aren't ventriloquists just inherently creepy?
Well, true.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But then, like, we know so many show people that were just like, this is just a thing that you do to entertain people.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be crazy to do it.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think the only way to do it with a supernatural doll is to just barely see it move at all.
Yeah, I think
you know,
what
give
you
us
want,
like an eye flick and a blink.
Certainly yeah, or talking. Just the fact that it's in places it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think the more subtly you play that, probably the better that works, and have it manipulating things as opposed to running around with a knife like Chucky, because that just gets laughable.
Having it be the Puppet Master.
I don't think they've ever made a movie with that title.
No.
It's a good title, though. Put that in your back pocket.
Mm. Hold on to it.
I was thinking Puppet Master or Master of Puppets. One of those I want to make a movie, and one of them I want to make an album.
Huh.
I think those are both good titles for that.
Mm-hmm.
The poster for Magic that I saw, Anthony Hopkins looks like Rutger Hauer on it.
He does,
and,
yeah.
And then I went to go look for Rutger Hauer on IMDb just now, and there's a 2011 movie called The Rite with Anthony Hopkins. It's like an exorcism movie that both he and Rutger Hauer are in.
Oh, wow.
Which I feel like at some point we now have to watch it because of that one time when I thought Anthony Hopkins looked like Rutger Hauer on a movie poster. So...
All right.
Let's get a whole week of that at some point.
That seems like a thing.
Actors that we thought were different actors.
Yeah. Actors that Adam thought were Rutger Hauer on movie posters.
What was the movie with the guy who's not Bryan Cranston? I can throw that one back in.
The Darkness.
Yeah.
The one where I was just adamant that it was fucking Walter White.
Oh, you're right. He does look like Rutger Hauer.
I'm telling you, man. It looks just like him on there. Matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and say it is Rutger Hauer on that poster. They couldn't get Hopkins in time.
Yeah. The last 25 minutes notwithstanding, Rutger Hauer was in this entire movie.
All right, so we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with our assignments for next week.
Yep.
All right, so for next week, we are going to take another listener suggestion, because that's the thing we do if you're a listener and you suggest things. These three were suggested by Quine, who, to be fair, had not seen them, but just let us know that...
No, Quine was last week.
Had.
Well, I think you mean...
No, I said the three that we just watched.
These ones we just spoke about.
These ones, the next ones, are suggested by...
a doog.
Yeah, a man, an enigma, a mystery, a man simply known as Doug.
Huh.
He could be, like, Doug who draws the KOL comic.
He could be Doug, and he's out of here... Do we dig Doug?
Yeah, we do. We could beware of Doug.
Quail man.
I was going to say, he could be Doug. But he suggests a Scandinavian theme, so...
Scambadabadabium.
Scambadabadabium.
I'm the scat band.
Scandinavia.
That shouldn't have been funny.
So we're going to do three subtitled movies this week, which means I have to read, which means I'm going to have to find a pair of glasses somewhere.
Which is pretty fucking amazing for someone who makes their money writing things. Ugh, I got to read.
Look.
That'd be
if
like
you,
me every
if
week
you
going,
made
ugh.
A music video that was just words,
the best part
would
is
anybody
like,
watch
if,
it?
If every week I was like, ugh, I got to watch some movies now. That's like, ugh. I wish I could just read these movies every week.
I'm just going to... There was the novella that was based on this movie.
So we're going to read some books called Let the Right One In, Troll Hunter, and Dead Snow.
Yep.
I've only seen Let the Right One In, so...
I've seen all three of these.
We have one movie, two movies, all three movies.
Yeah, there we go. So,
excellent.
I'm excited. These are all movies I enjoyed.
So. All right, so join us in Scandinavia.
Scandinavia. Next week,
we'll see you.
Actually, wouldn't Scandinavian? It would be much more death metal. Really,
whatever.
Scandinavia.
Yeah, like that. And then, you know, Josh, hit him with them social networks, dude.
Oh, sure. Let's go. You can go to facebook.com/horrordog. We live there. We're also on horrorshowhotdog.com, where you can leave comments. Reddit.com/r/HSHD is good. At HSHD Podcast is a good way to get a hold of us. And on the sidebar of our website, you'll see Society 6 links to buy stuff that Adam made.
Yeah.
So do that.
All right, then.
We'll see you next week.
I got a hot story for you.
Joe Newspaperman, you were here the whole time.
That's what you're getting tomorrow.
And stop.